And I think you need to start your video, otherwise we won't see you.
Okay.
There we go. On.
Yes.
Okay, we are ready to go.
Okay, thank you. The question of kosher stam is a question that has bothered generations and generations of people, and the solutions seem to change with the generations. So rather than delve into a history of what has been in the past, I would ask a basic and very fundamental question. And my basic question is as follows. What can I draw on to have some kind of customer guarantee that what I'm going to purchase is actually kosher? Kosher stamp. I need to know, first of all, that the person that is writing is actually qualified. I try to tell all my students that I've taught throughout some 30-odd years, you are a professional and you need to take pride in your work. Now, one of the things about a professional is that he stands in front of a board, or he sits in front of a board and a board of people, and he is tested. His knowledge. Can you imagine going to somebody who calls himself a doctor and is totally unqualified and unused to the actual material involved? So first of all, when we go to purchase whatever it is, our stamp, we need to make sure that the person that is actually creating it is qualified. Interestingly enough, the word sofer actually doesn't mean a scribe. We give it that translation, but it really means a counter. You know, an interesting calculation. Our mezuzah, which we have on all the doorposts of our house, and we have it on our batei midrash, and we have it on our places of work, if we're working in an environment where the majority of people there are Jewish. Such a common mitzvah. Let's count 170 words and 713 letters. Have you ever thought about how long it would take to write accurately all of these words and letters? So, the halachas that are involved in the creation of those 713 letters in the mezuzah, and more than double that in our parshas of Tefillin, the time it takes to learn all these halachas, one needs to come out of that whole process as a professional. Nowadays also, not only do we have the person who actually does the writing, but we have a relatively new malacha, which is called a magia. A magia is a proofreader. How often it is that we would read a magazine or a book and we come across a spelling mistake, we come across a mistake in syntax, and we begin to criticize. Hasn't this been proofread? How can we approach such a work? So we need to know about a sofer, and we need to know about a magia. A magia is a proofreader. If it comes to the mezuzah, we need to know also on what it's written and with what it's written. If it comes to a mezuzah, we need to know where we're going to place it. The complications, the shilas that arise just with regards to knowing where to put a mezuzah. It's easy to say the mezuzah goes on the doorpost on the right-hand side as we go into the room. But sometimes the places, they don't have doors. Sometimes the places, we're not quite sure. If we were to close the door, there'd be no room for the mezuzah. So this, we need the sofer, we need the magia, and we need somebody, a rav, who's expert in actually knowing where to place the mezuzah. These are far too many questions to deal with in one short shiur. So let's deal first and foremost, the sofer. The sofer himself, as I've said, needs to make sure that he knows all the halachas. Did you know that a mezuzah needs to be written in order? That's to say, we start with the shin of Shema, and we finish with the tzadi of Ala Oretz, and we need to go through in order. And if it's not done in order, the mezuzah is pasul. Not only that, if we find some kind of a mistake in the middle, we can't correct it unless we scratch all the way back until that particular point and rewrite everything again. And if there is Shem Hashem in the middle, it can't be done. The same goes for tefillin. Let's examine a couple of words in something that we say at least twice a day, sometimes three times a day. Ksharfam le'os al yodecho, v'hoyu le'totofos bein einecho, uchsavtom al mezuzos beisecho, uvish orecho. We're all familiar with these words. Ksharfam, we need to tie them on. What do we tie? Yodcho, we have a shel yad. Totofos bein einecho, we have a shel rosh. Ksavtom al mezuzos, we have the mezuzos that go al beisecho and uvish orecho. Having said that, ksharta, what do we tie our tefillin with? We tie our tefillin with the ritzuas. The halachas with regards to the ritzuas as well. I was talking recently to a person who wants to buy tefillin for his son. Son's coming up for bar mitzvah in about a year's time. And I said to him, you need to buy in component parts. You need to buy, first of all, the batim. You need to buy, second of all, the parshas. And you need to buy also the ritzuas. And all of these need to be seen as component parts. So far, we've got a bit of a mishmash. Sofa, magia, batim, mezuzahs, houses, all kinds of things like this. Let's try and make some seder. First of all, let's deal only with mezuzah. Let's ask some fundamental questions. What is the mezuzah? Is it the box or is it the text? If it's a text, what is written? If it's a text and it needs to be written, on what is it written? Written? Who can write it? Can anyone write it? Anybody who knows to write Hebrew letters, is that good enough? So, we have to say that a mezuzah is written on specially prepared parchment. The parchment must be carefully prepared by a Jewish person, and it needs to be done lishmo. Lishmo means that it needs to be prepared with intent, that when the skins are placed in the various solutions, it needs to be done l'shem kedusha, specifically for the mitzvah. Once we have our parchment, mezuzah actually has lines scored onto the parchment. And if there are no lines, the mezuzah is invalid. It's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that we require to have lines scored there. Over a course of time, it could be that the lines become faint, almost not recognizable. What's the status of the mezuzah then? Okay. One of the faults that we find nowadays is that mezuzahs, which can be anything from tiny, tiny, tiny little things to massive scrolls which you can find on the archway of Sha'ar Yafo, sometimes in the old city of Yerushalayim, not so much here in this country. But we can find massive mezuzahs. What is the difference? Well, to a certain extent, the larger the mezuzah, the easier it is to write. And if we have some 713 letters to write in our mezuzah, and the halakhas that are involved, we're now getting into the thousands. It's cheating a little bit to say thousands, but nevertheless, hundreds of halakhas with regards to each letter with its halakhas. And if it's not written properly, it could well be that it is invalid. So the mezuzah needs to be handwritten. We can find in the market nowadays, we can find photocopies of mezuzahs. Fortunately, most of the photocopies are photocopies of badly scribbled, hard to even say that it's writing. Maybe some chicken has run across the whatever it is. So we find photocopies. Sometimes the photocopies are actually on parchment and even more difficult to discern. Sometimes these mezuzahs can be produced by a process which is called silk screening. Again, because it is not handwritten every single letter and in order and with the proper intent, then the mezuzah could well be invalid. Going to a shop, and no matter how orthodox the person is that is selling the mezuzah, very often we find that the person selling the mezuzah has no notion whatsoever of the laws that are required for the production of such a thing. What that means is that the person cannot be relied upon to actually say the mezuzah is or isn't kosher. So what do we need? We need a customer guarantee. We need to ask the seller. We need to ask the vendor, who wrote the mezuzah? Please show me some kind of proof that the person that wrote the mezuzah is a qualified sofer stam. And if not, my advice, don't buy it. Can you imagine going into a butcher shop, wanting to purchase a piece of meat? All of us look for the heksher that we find is comfortable for us. Do we do the same when we go to purchase mezuzahs? Do we do the same thing when we go to purchase our tefillin? Do we look at the same thing even when we have some kind of Sefer Torah program to say everybody can join in, purchase a letter, this, that, and the other? Is the sofer qualified? That is our only customer guarantee. So there are organizations, there are Batei Din, and we're in the process of setting up something like that also here in London at the moment, where we can actually guarantee to the customer that the sofer who has produced the work, he knows his stuff. Even if we look at the economics, imagine, for instance, that it takes approximately 2 hours to write a relatively inexpensive mezuzah. And we purchase this at 35, 40, even £45. That means, let's say, at £40, £20 an hour, less expensive, and that's what it's being sold at retail. How much is the sofer himself actually making? Is this the sort of price that the sofer can live on? Is this the sort of setup whereby we can say, oh, yes, it actually is a good price? The shop also needs to make a profit. So you can end up with a circumstance where what seems to be inexpensive is actually very suspicious, and the person is probably not a qualified sofer. The person is possibly even guilty of selling things which we can say at best are forgeries. Let's look at a second at tefillin. Tefillin, like I say, have component parts. The batim, the retuot, and the parshiot. Batim, let me give you some names and ask ourselves, are we familiar exactly with the terminology here? Tefillin, or echod. The tefillin need to be made from or echod. What does or echod mean? Or echod means that the batim need to be made from one skin. Oh, now we have one skin. Gasot or dakot? Brasot means they're usually made from ox hide. Dakot means they're usually made from either sheep or goat hide. But dakot need to be strengthened. The goat and the sheep, the skins that are produced are very, very thin. It won't stand by itself. Needs to be made in a particular way. So we can already begin to see that the cheaper materials lead to cheaper work, lead to work that is possibly less accurate. We also have tefillin, which are called pshutim. Pshutim, generally speaking, very difficult to say that something which is made of several pieces and joined together, devek habechibo, that just because they've got glue that is joining the various pieces together, this makes or echot. This is very questionable within halacha. So we know we need or echot. The difference between gasot and dakot when they're 100% kosher is usually the price. The more expensive, the gasot. The less expensive, the dakot. The more complicated of the two, the shelrosh or the shelyad, right, is obviously the shelrosh. The shelrosh has two shinim, a shin of four heads, a shin of three heads. And that doesn't always affect the kashrut, other than to say, how are these shinim formed? They should be formed in such a way that they are created by hand. In the same way that we create a letter by writing it, so also we need to form the shin, right, in a way to say that each part of the shin was formed and not just pressed out, either from inside or from squeezing from the outside or whatever. The shin needs to be almost as if it was written. The top part of the bais is known as the ketzitza. The ketzitza, that in the shelrosh, is where we have the four segments. In each of these four segments, there is a parasha put in. How is the parasha put in? Is there a particular way that it needs to be put in? I've opened up tefillin where I've seen that the parashiot have been put in upside down. Can you imagine, for instance, putting up a mezuzah on the doorpost and the mezuzah being upside down? It's as if you don't have a mezuzah. Similarly, if the parashiot inside the tefillin are put in upside down, also it invalidates the tefillin. That means that at best, we haven't performed the mitzvah. At worst, a bracha levatala, a bracha in vain. Another part of the tefillin, the base underneath the ktsitsa, is called the titura. Titura means bridge. And the back of the bais, through which the ritsuot go, the ma'avarta, that's what it means, the place where the ritsuot, where the straps are passed through, that's the third part of the tefillin. The ktsitsa, the titura, and the ma'avarta. Is that all? Absolutely not. In order to put the parashiot inside, obviously the bais needs to be open. If it's open, once the parashiot are inside, needs to be closed. How is it closed? Can it be glued shut? No. It must be sewn closed. The sewing is done with something called gid, which is sinew from the heel area of a calf. And with this gid, the bais is sewn. Is that all? No. Because we now come to something which is probably the most lax part of tefillin. People don't seem to pay attention. And that's the squareness. The bais needs to be square. Where? The ketzitza, which is on top, needs to measure a perfect square. The titura, not including the ma'avarta. The titura needs to form a perfect square. And the stitching on the top and on the bottom need to form a perfect square. That means, for instance, with regards to the stitching, if one stitch is out and one stitch is in, doesn't form a square, the tefillin are invalid. A lot of people look at the corners on top of the bais. Are they rounded? Often that's the least of our worries. Old tefillin, new tefillin makes a difference. Certainly in new tefillin, the corners shouldn't be round. In old tefillin, you need to show it to an expert to decide as to whether it is or isn't square. So squareness we need to see in the bias, in the titura, and in the stitching. And if it is not square, it is invalid. To do with the shalrosh, we've said there are four compartments, and we can see lines, this is only on my hand, we can see lines on the bias that indicates where exactly one part of the bias ends and another begins, where one compartment starts, where another compartment carries on. And occasionally we can see those lines are not actually true indications of these of where the compartments are. They're just lines that are scratched in the paint to make it look good. That is the case. The tefillin are invalid. We need to be able to see from the outside exactly where the compartments are. And if not, it's not good. The squareness. The squareness can be done by machinery. The squareness can be done when the machinery is operated by some kind of foot treadle. The machinery can be operated where there's some kind of a hand-operated flywheel. And it makes a difference in the hidur of the bias. If the operator says, L'shem Kedushas Tefillin, and presses the button, most authorities would say that that has a level of kashrut. Obviously, the best level of kashrut is when things are done by hand, and then you can guarantee that what you've got is something lishma. Going back for a moment to the bias of the shalrosh, we described the four compartments. We've said that the four compartments must be easily and clearly identifiable from the outside, that the lines that we see are the actual indentations of the compartment separations. Nowadays, it's quite common to have a gid going between those compartment walls, and that's called chut hatfira, bein bayis le bayis. The hidul with that is that gid that's gone between to indicate that the four compartments are actually separate, that gid is then used to sew the rest of the bias closed. Some authorities say that after the bias has been closed with the sewing method, then and only then can the bias be glued shut. Some authorities do hold by that, some they don't. As a customer, when you go to buy, obviously you need to make sure that the halakhas that you hold by, the rov that you hold by, conform to what it is you're actually buying. The parshiot inside can be one of three forms of writing. Ashkenazim, they follow a tradition of writing called Ktav Bet Yosef. Now, Bet Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, was a Sephardi, but nevertheless, the style of letters that he advocates is actually what the Ashkenazi tradition is. The Sfaradim have a Ktav Sfaradi, sometimes known as Ktav Velish. And Chassidim have something that's called Ktav Ari. Any of these is good. Each one should really go according to their own custom. An Ashkenazi with Ktav Bet Yosef, a Sfaradi with Ktav Sfaradi, and the Chassidic Olam also with Ktav Ari. Between Ktav Ari and Ktav Bet Yosef, there is a sort of compromise between those and the Chassidei Lubavitch Chaban. That's what's known as Alter Rebbe Ksiva, and they have that. It is important that each person goes according to his custom. Al titosh Torah simecha min hagavuseinu biyadeinu. Al titosh Torah simecha, do not forsake that which has been the custom from years and years and years ago. And Minhag Avosenu Biyadeinu follows the same principle, that if this is the custom that our fathers had and our grandfathers had, then that is the custom that we should have. Those that are coming into religious observance from having been living a different lifestyle should consult a rov as to what their minhag should be. In summary, I would like to say the following. The sofer needs to be qualified. We need to make sure that the production of the mezuzah, with all its 713 letters, have all been produced correctly. We cannot rely on the seller to give us this information. The tefillin that we want to buy, because there are so many different parts, and in a half-hour shiur, it's not possible to mention, to go into great detail as to what's what. Nevertheless, we should look at them as component parts. The parshiot need to be looked at separately. The batim need to be looked at separately. And the ritsuot also. Just recently, I had somebody come to me with ritsuot, that the thickness of the ritsuah had split in half. Obviously, this is completely invalid and was never kosher. This poor person has been making a bracha levatola for a good number of years, obviously not knowing. I would like to say in conclusion that the efforts that we are taking now here in London to make sure that suppliers of stam are reliable, in the sense that what they are selling is actually reliable. We're trying to take steps that would guide a person through the use of reliable hekshirim, that even if the vendor is not so familiar with all the laws of stam, nevertheless, just like your piece of meat has a hekshir that you choose of whatever, so also tefillin, mezuzahs will have the same thing. I wish everybody that we should have throughout this time only opportunities to make Be'ezrat Hashem good brachas, kosher brachas, and that all our stam should be kosher. Thank you very much indeed. Mm-hmm.